Okay, welcome everybody to the Baseball Prospectus Podcast. This is Up and In, episode 0.9. We're calling it that because it's kind of a dry run. And I'm Kevin Goldstein. If you read Baseball Prospectus, you know me as the future shot guy. I write about prospects, the draft, scouting, player development. And with me is someone who you might not know so well yet, and it's Jason Parks, live from DFA, or as the locals call it, Mexico City. Say hello to the internet, Jason.
Hello. Howdy.
So, before we get too much...
Buen dia.
Buenos dias. Before we get into who Jason is or anything, I just want to talk about this as a project first real quick. And that, you know, so I got to ask recently, why am I doing a podcast, or why are we doing a podcast? And the answer really is because I want to. And I have found in my 41 years that really is where the best things come out of, is when you actually want to do something. And I've been talking about doing a podcast all year, really. And here we are in the middle of May. I'm recording episode 0.9 because we screwed around a lot and we tried a lot of things and it was never right. And it was really my fault, because I don't think I was really communicating to anybody what I really wanted this thing to be. And I listen to a ton of podcasts, and I listen to them while I work.
Why
I drive? Because I'm a cool guy. I'm a cool hip.
I got with you.
Technology focused guy. I even have Foursquare. And so, and the ones that I liked the best were when you had a few people, two or three or four people, sitting talking about a subject that they had a lot of passion for, but it wasn't a radio show. We have a radio show. We have BP Radio. We have Will Carroll doing that and doing a great job. And all the kind of dry runs we did before sounded too much like a radio show and kind of sounded too professional almost, if you will. And the ones, sure, I like the best are the ones that it's a relaxed kind of vibe. A great example that I always kind of brought up was the Kevin Smith podcast, the Smodcast. And there's some other podcasts to listen to where we have a main focus here, a main subject going on here. But, you know, hopefully we're entertaining enough personalities, and you know, my ego is big enough for this, and Jason's is as well, where, you know, if we end up rambling for 18 minutes about Polanski films for a while, that's okay too. You know, and we're not going to edit this thing within, and really at all. We're just going to talk for a while, then we'll cut and get a new beverage and talk for a while. And I don't know if this is going to be 20 minutes long or 80. We don't know. We're just going to talk for a while. And you know, and we're just going to do this the way we want to do it. And we hope you like it. And we certainly want everybody's feedback. And we want to make people happy. But at the same time, not really. We're kind of doing this the way we want to do it. And this is what we want to do. So get some housekeeping out of the way before we start. And if you want to contact us, you want to email us, it's podcast@baseballprospectus.com. You can follow both of us at Twitter. I'm at Kevin_Goldstein. Jason is at Professor Parks, because he's kind of uppity that way. And, right. You know, we'll have a website. Once we have all the approval process done by dealing with Apple, we'll be on iTunes if you want the feed for that and all that good stuff. If you have Skype, you can call and leave us a voicemail. Just look for Kevin Goldstein or my username King Clipon, and you can leave us a voicemail. Who knows? Maybe we'll play it. And so there's all sorts of ways to get a hold of us. And, you know, one of the things when I was thinking about how I wanted to do this is I kept telling people I want it to be like the kind of time I have talking about baseball and other stuff when we all get together after book signings. And, you know, a lot of the people are sitting around at a bar or a pizza place or whatever, just having fun, smart, at times irreverent conversations about baseball. And I've known Jason for a pretty long time, a few years now, and he's actually, you know, last time I was in New York, Jason and I got together a few times after book signings, and we had the best time in the world, I thought. And so the best time ever, really. When you think about the highlights of your life,
time.
Yeah, the nights we spent in that completely empty bar,
right
on Fifth Avenue, or was it on Fifth? Or I think it was on Fifth.
It was on Sixth, but it was like Fifth.
It was, yeah, it reminded me of Fifth, but it was on Sixth. And I said, that's what I want the podcast to be, is these times I've had with Jason. I think this is what I want this thing to be.
That should have been the name of the podcast.
What, Empty Bar on Sixth?
No, These Times I've Had with Jason.
isn't that who's that Detroit writer who writes? Isn't that Golfing with Maury, that guy?
Oh, probably. I don't know.
We could do that. It sounds like you've died. It sounds like these times I've had with Jason sounds like this trip book I've written after you've died.
We'll see. See if I get home from Mexico.
Exactly. So that's why we're doing this with Jason. And Jason actually is a guy, if you are a Rangers fan, you may know Jason. And even if you're a regular baseball fan, you may know Jason. He does a lot of writing over at Baseball Time in Arlington, which is at, what's the URL there, bbtia.com?
bbtia.com.
So. Okay, I got it right. And Jason does a lot of scouting of the Rangers there, and Jason is an up-and-coming guy who eventually wants to get into scouting as a way of making a living, even though there's no to be made in scouting.
If that's possible.
Exactly. So that's just the intro. We're going to get going. We have ideas for things we want to do, and we're going to try some of them out. And, you know, this is an organic thing. It's going to change. It's going to get better. There's some things we'll keep doing, some things we won't do anymore. And of course, you know, we welcome your suggestions, and if they're good ones, we'll do them, and if they're not, we won't. One thing we want to talk about was, just to keep it semi-current, was talk about kind of some of the things we've been watching when it comes to baseball over the past week. And Jason, you've had a couple of these in the last couple of weeks, and this does relate to the Rangers, but it involves the tactical decisions of Ron Washington.
Indeed, and this has been a topic of discussion on the Rangers blogs, Baseball Time in Arlington, Lone Star Ball, and you know, Joey Matches from Baseball Time in Arlington, Adam Morris from Lone Star Ball have been able to articulate this better than I will be able to today. But it's about the sack bunting with Elvis Andrus, who's getting on base at a 42% clip at this point, and yet he leads the team in sack bunts, and that's a problem. And I want to know, as far as, you know, when we'll get into this later with Goldman, but what makes Ron Washington a good manager? Is it the fact that the team is in first place and playing well, winning baseball? Good chance of winning the division, in fact, a great chance of winning that division. Yet, his in-game management, it leaves a lot of people scratching their heads. And, you know, to be honest with you, I think he's a really great coach. I've seen him work with the players. I know he controls that clubhouse, and that's important. That means something. However, is poor in-game management negating some of that? And I just don't know how a team can play winning baseball when your manager constantly takes the bat out of the hands of a guy who's getting on base at a 42% clip. What say you?
I agree with you, but I have huge problems with managers, and you know, actually, Stephen Goldman is going to join us to talk about this issue later on. Would be the first to tell you that, because he's the one, every year when we do the book, he's the one who's yelling at me because I did not write the manager comment because I'm uncomfortable with it. And, you know, I don't know. The at the very basics of things, if we judge this in a vacuum, bunting Elvis Andrus is stupid. You know, and I don't know if there's any other way to go about it. Bunting Elvis Andrus was stupid, and I don't know of any logical argument to that would defy that fact. But that's not everything Ron Washington is. And there's all sorts
of course not.
Yeah, and so we get into all these things that I don't know how you measure them, and I don't think there's any ability or there's any possibility of measuring them. You know, is Ron Washington, does he deserve any credit for the fact that Elvis Andrus is getting on base at a 420 clip? You know what I mean? Is that because of Ron Washington? Did he do something? Is he helping Elvis Andrus play better when he's not doing the stupid thing and making him bunt?
I mean, that's an interesting thing to consider. I don't know. I mean, as you said, I mean, we can't really measure this, but, and I am going to give Washington credit for getting the most out of these players. I really do think that he is a good coach. I think he's a fantastic coach, and I've seen him around the players, and there's something to that. But, you know, at what point is this team winning in spite of his in-game management? And if that's the case, is he a good manager? Even if they win the West, that gives him all the job security he needs. Is that enough?
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, but you get to this, right, are they winning despite him? But, you know, I always see with managers, there's kind of two sides of the manager. There's the tactical in-game management stuff. There's, you know, making the lineups, pulling a guy and bringing a reliever, bringing a different reliever in a different situation, starting your rotation, all that, bunting Elvis Andrus, that kind of crap, often. Right? I don't think that's that hard, actually. I think you're capable of it. I think I'm capable of it. I think most of our listeners are capable of it. You know what I mean? I don't think that's that hard. And, you know, I'm always entertained once interleague play begins and they talk about how hard it is for the American guys playing the National League teams because of the intricacies of the double switch. Like you need a doctorate from Princeton to understand how to do that. But I don't think that stuff's that hard. But at the same time, I don't think you, me, or any of our readers could be big league managers. I think all of them, including us, would fail miserably because of the other aspect of being a manager, which is kind of helming a team and leading a team and getting
controlling egos.
And getting performances out of guys. It's a thing. I know the whole stat world and I have fun with it too, like to rip Dusty Baker. But you know what? Dusty Baker's as good at that aspect as anyone, which is why he always has a job. It doesn't last forever, and those kind of guys who are just helmers tend to have shorter stints because, you know, whatever the shit is they're spewing, it wears thin after a while.
Right.
And it stops, it kind of starts going in one ear and out the other. But I think we undercut that kind of thing, and we don't think about that kind of thing too much, and we just worry about the fact that he bunted Elvis Andrus, which was stupid. But I don't know how we measure the second thing. I don't know how we measure how good Ron Washington. I don't know if we say, you know, Colby Lewis pitching really well, part of that's Ron Washington, or how much credit you got to give to, like, you know, JD and his staff for finding Lewis back in Asia pitching well. I don't know.
I don't either. I know that this is a hot topic right now. And, you know, and here's the real problem. I guess was it last night's game? I believe the Rangers are down. I want to say 1-2, and it, you know, ultimately it doesn't really matter. But 2-1, nobody out. Elvis up. You know, 420 on base percentage. Drops the bunt. Sacrifice is successful. Third and second, one out. Two runs end up scoring. Okay. Well, then it's seen as a good tactical move when in
right,
fact it is not. And so. Where's the line here? I mean, does it have to fail? Do you want it to fail in order to point your finger at that failure? You know, I mean, I hate rooting for failure, but
well,
it seems like that's going to be the only way to stop it.
Can't you say it worked in spite of itself?
Well, yeah, I can say that, and I do say that, but will the people who make the decision on that see that?
What do you mean the people who make the decision? The people who make the decision on Ron Washington's job?
Yes.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of thing you might want to.
I'm not calling for its head.
I'm not saying you are. No.
When does somebody step in and say, "Man, quit bunting Elvis? It's ridiculous."
Right. I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of teams. I don't know what the relationship is at all. And you know, this might be better for, you know, someone who's a beat writer there.
right.
giggle. there's good ones. But someone who actually knows the relationship between John Daniels and Washington, because you know there's a lot of teams where the general manager makes the team, and in spring he hands those players to the manager, and says do what you will, and walks away slowly. And there's other teams where the general manager hands his plane is going. Well, the general manager is going to be that guy, and he's going to call the manager and go, "Why the heck are you butting Elvis Andrus?" I don't know which one John Daniels is.
I can't speak to that either. I mean,
right, but John's a smart guy. I think John probably knows that they shouldn't have bunted Elvis Andrus on a logical baseball level. But I don't know if he's going to call Ron Washington and tell him that.
Right. I have a fundamental problem with this so-called fundamental baseball. I mean, it's like it's a little league coach. And bunting is the right play regardless of the situation. Moving the runners, that's fundamental baseball. Well, is it? I mean, we can be honest and say, you know, in most cases, yeah, sure, depending on the hitter, I mean, if you have, you know, a guy who's hitting 200 who's barely making contact with the ball, yet he can bunt, well, then you sacrifice the guy. But when a guy is swinging a very hot bat, you know, he's hitting 320, he's getting on base at a 42% clip, why are you taking the bat out of his hands? I mean, come on.
Oh, I agree with you. And just so for any Rangers fans listening here, Elvis Andrus is having a wonderful season.
And so, you hate him.
Said Kevin Goldstein at 10:25 p.m. Central on May 20th. So you guys can all get off my case a little.
I mean, didn't you call him a 4A player? What was that?
I called him not the next Hanley Ramirez, and therefore I am public enemy number one, according to some in the city.
No. You said that he was going to be in the Mexican leagues in like 18 months.
Something like that, yeah.
Moved to second base.
Right. I think I said Nick Punto's a better player.
Right. Well, you did.
Yeah, something like that. Right. But it seems like, yeah, we're talking about this. It's funny because we're talking about this. We have lots of questions. I'm not sure. I don't know how we can even get anywhere. Let's
get Ron on the podcast.
That's what we'll do.
And I'll ask him.
We're planning for guests. You know, we're going to have a little later on, we're going to have not Jim Tracy chiming in on this fine subject. But we are planning on having guests like Stephen Goldman when we talk about managers later and others in the future. We'll shoot for Ron Washington, which of course is never going to happen.
I think it's going to happen.
I like your positivity. I do. So let's wait and we'll talk to Steven about this and see if he can get us any.
Paul McCartney as well.
Paul's a good baseball guy. But it goes against my no-hitter.
Right. And we'll get into that. Maybe a whole podcast.
Right. We agreed on that, which is once we started.
We didn't agree on that. It's ridiculous that you don't like the Beatles.
But they're certainly agreed that we wouldn't have no Beatles as guests at any point.
Oh, yes, that's right. We did. And I didn't listen.
Not that we only have two living Beatles left, right?
Are you counting Ringo?
He's alive, right?
Oh yeah, he's alive.
Okay, so we're halfway there.
Are you counting him as a Beatle?
Oh come on, drummer hater.
I'm not a drummer hater. I mean, I just don't. Ringo's fine.
Do you count George Harrison?
Well, he's not alive, but yeah, I did count George Harrison.
Well, when he was alive, you count him as a so-called a Jason Parks approved Beatle?
Yes, he was a Jason Parks approved Beatle.
Okay, so even though Ringo's in the band just as long, he doesn't count because he was just the goofy drummer, and he didn't.
I actually met Ringo Starr at the Whole Foods in Chelsea, and I handled him. I went up behind him and I touched him.
What'd you say?
I was that guy. Well, this is kind of stupid, but I actually went, "Hey, man, Ringo, all right." I'm a big fan. I guess you never hear that.
What did he say?
I put my hands on his shoulders and I touched the top of his head.
Wow. Were you drunk or anything?
I'd have to be drunk
to touch Ringo.
No, I think you would touch Ringo. I don't know if you would handle Ringo. I would consider it. I handled him.
And yeah, that's gutsy. That's a gutsy move.
My friend was like, "Man, you had your hands all over Ringo," and I was like, "Hell yeah, I did. It's Ringo."
And how did he react? How did he react to being handled?
He was absolutely cool. Turned around and talked to me. I'm glad it was Ringo, because if it was Paul, man, you don't even know what I would do.
We wouldn't even be having this podcast. You'd be in prison.
Yeah, I mean, I would be locked up.
Poor Beatle.
My name would be on a list. I'd be registering.
I think your name's already on some lists.
Probably.
Moving on.
I told you I wouldn't do it, and I did. Damn it.
Exactly. We still talk about it. It's deadly. I don't have, like, a specific game to talk about or a specific incident in baseball to talk about that I saw. I want to talk about a very general thing, and that is, again, if you're a BP reader, you know that you see every day from me the minor league update, which is basically the night in the minors, and, you know, write up some like five or six guys, blurbs on 10 more guys. And to do that requires night work, which I spend all night kind of going through the box scores, getting text messages and instant messages from scouts who are at the games and talking to people. And while I do that, I made the best decision of my working life about in April when I realized that we had a perfectly good 19-inch monitor in a closet, and I put it next to my big monitor, and now it's my MLB TV monitor. So I can work on the one monitor, and I can have the game on the other. And so late at night, I'm watching West Coast games, obviously, because all the other games are over. And for the last couple of weeks, I found myself watching a lot of Dodgers games. And I think it's easy to forget until you start watching a lot of Dodgers games how insanely, remarkably great Vin Scully is. And Vin Scully is 345 years old. He's been doing Dodgers games.
Listed.
He's been doing Dodgers games since Babe Herman was there. I mean, it's like the 50s or something. And he has no color commentator. It's just Vin. He flies solo, and he does the whole game, and he keeps talking. He never stops talking. He has this lilting, perfect voice. He describes everything that is going on and adds to it. He is an amazing baseball intellect, and an intellectual, which is something I think we've lost a lot in broadcasting. I think Vin's a true intellectual, with just a mastery of the language. And one of my great goals from technology. Technology is going very far. Obviously, we were recording a podcast, and we were promised flying cars by now, and we didn't get them. But one thing I do want someone to figure out is a way we can have some sort of computerized Vin Scully that's perfect, and no matter what game I tune to on MLB TV, Vin Scully is calling it because he's that good. Have you watched a Vin Scully game lately, Jason?
No.
This is your assignment.
Okay.
To the next time you plop on your MLB TV, you know, forget about the Rangers and then Elvis Andrus Bunning. Turn on a Dodgers game. It has to be I'm not sure I'm going to get this right, so someone will email and yell at me, but I think Scully only does home games and road games west of the Rockies. So Colorado and all points west, he'll do those road games too. So he'll do the San Diego, San Francisco, Arizona, Colorado. But he won't do, when the Dodgers play in Pittsburgh, he's not going to go with them to that. So the next time they're either at home or west of Denver, your assignment is to listen to Vin Scully. I think this guy is the most I'm just floored sometimes. Every time I'm working and I will stop and look at my monitor and go, did he just say something that brilliant? I don't even have an exact example for you. But he flows everything perfectly. His mastery of the language is ridiculous. And I've always been a Vin Scully fan, but I've become the biggest fan of all time, I think. I want to start a fan club. At 41, I want to start a fan club with 8x10 photos and T-shirts.
Well, you should. But why limit it to baseball? You know, let's take it a step further. If you're going to make a Scully modulator, you know, let's have it, you know, with the option of being able to attach to, like, your significant other so that you can be laying in bed with, like, your wife or girlfriend or boyfriend or whatever. And, you know, hey, what do you want to watch? And then it's Vin Scully.
Because that would be creepy.
Well, I mean, you know, sometimes you got to take it that far.
I'm fine. Yeah, you're right. I do like the idea. I would like to maybe just turn on CNN and then Vin Scully's doing the news.
Yeah, or, I mean, anything. You know, you go to a restaurant, the waiter that comes up is Vin Scully. And then you can give him, like, a mask to wear.
I think we're making
really
the world.
Go that
I
far.
Think we could make the world a better place this way.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the answer.
So this is your assignment once you get back from Mexico City, of course. You need to watch at least one Dodgers game in totality.
I've seen him before. I mean, I respect
his
talent.
I mean, yeah,
he's like ageless. He's Betty White. He's awesome.
Wow, should we get a movement to have him host Saturday Night Live?
Well, I mean, I don't know if the East Coast people are going to love him.
Yeah, you're right. We should
get him on the podcast.
We should get him. He'll be in. That's another guest. So our upcoming guest.
We should get him to ask Ron Washington why he's bunting, because right. Scully would understand that.
So we'll get upcoming on the podcast, people, Ron Washington and Vin Scully. We promise.
Right.
So that's what we've been watching. And now we're going to talk about some of the basic news of the week. The big story this week, of course, was Hanley Ramirez dogging it. And
is it really that big of a story? I mean, should it have been?
Well, I'm not sure either of us can comment on it because we've never played in the major leagues. Which is,
oh,
course,
come on.
Which is, of course, that's what Hanley said. That's what Hanley said.
Well, I mean, then we shouldn't even watch baseball then. What's the point?
Exactly. I'm call me old school. I'm a big fan of what Freddie Gonzalez did. I thought he did the right thing. Well, I did a radio bit just a couple hours ago in St. Louis, and and the host there was saying that you can't do that to your superstar. I wasn't sure why. But if anyone does that and dogs it during a game, if you're the 25th guy or the face of the franchise, shouldn't there be some sort of comeuppance? Or, based on what you said there earlier that I didn't let you finish, are we just making way too big a deal out of this?
Well, I mean, I think some people are making too big of a deal out of it. I mean, I don't... It's one of those issues that, I mean, obviously, I'm not in that clubhouse. I don't know how his day-to-day emotions are. I mean, I can't speak if he's a lunatic or not. I mean, if he's a lunatic and this is going to be, if he's a recidivist in that case, then maybe it's time to, you know, to get rid of him. But if this is something that is a one-time thing or maybe a two-time thing, I really just don't see that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's the kind of thing that I think everyone will probably have forgotten about by July. And I think it's the kind of thing that, had it not been such an obvious, publicly seen bit of dogging it, we just wouldn't know about it, so it wouldn't be so big a deal. But at the same time, I just don't think it's fair that Freddy Gonzalez is getting any sort of crap for what he did.
No, I mean, and if anything, he should be getting credit for people actually paying attention to Florida.
This is true as well. And he's gotten to a point where, I think you had to do what he did, and I don't think they should, bend over for Hanley Ramirez, no matter how good he is. And from what I've heard from people close to that situation is that, Hanley Ramirez isn't the happiest dude in the world, but 24 players got a lot more respect for Freddy Gonzalez right now.
Okay. I mean, what does that do to their performance?
It's a good question. We're back to the manager thing and we're just going to go in circles again.
Let's get Ron Washington on.
Okay. Okay.
Ron Washington. We'll ask him about this.
Okay. So our guest list now is Ron Washington, Vin Scully.
And Ron Washington.
Ron Washington again. And maybe Ringo Starr.
I think we can get them all.
This is going to be that big when it all comes right down to it. So the next thing I want to talk about is, and this falls more into my wheelhouse, which is Steven Strasburg and what's going on right now. And we're kind of in, I mean, this is kind of, it's becoming a bit historic where, ESPN, both on SportsCenter and on their crawl during SportsCenter, has Steven Strasburg highlights. They'll show you the highlights from Strasburg's AAA start. And on their crawl, one of the things will be what Steven Strasburg did last night at Syracuse. And obviously he had another great start the other night and hasn't allowed a run and blah, blah, blah. And I say blah, blah, blah because, last night when Steven Strasburg had his great line, for the first time ever, I did not do the bigger write-up for him on the Minor League Daily. And that's because I'm out of things to say. And I'm kind of bored by him. I will continue to be bored by him until he's in the big leagues, when I will become very excited by him again. But, I mean, right now we're at a point where, every time he's thrown, every start he's made, I've written, between 150 and 300 words that say, the command was great. He's mid to upper 90s with the fastball. His changeup is... a 70 pitch, plus. His breaking ball is a 70 pitch. His amazing command and control. The second he gets to the majors, he's the best pitcher in Washington, maybe one of the best in baseball. I can't say it over and over again. And so, we still have probably two more starts out of Strasburg at Syracuse. And he'll probably be up in the big leagues in June. And is it okay to just kind of be bored by a guy?
Well, I mean, I think the minor leagues are about the human factor, development, ebbs and flows. And when someone appears to be an automaton, then there's no, where's the fun?
I'm having no fun. There's no fun and there's no learning experience. Like I haven't had a,
at least I don't think I haven't talked to a single, to dominate.
Yeah. I haven't talked to a single scout since never, who hasn't said something different about Steven Strasburg to me? And so we're at the point where it's like, okay, it's Steven Strasburg, he was great and whatever. And I don't think I'm really going to care again until June 4th or whatever, when he pitches in the big leagues.
Would you be happy if he, you know, had a disastrous start in AAA and, you know, looked like shit and the breaking ball was flat, he lost some zip, or, like, you know, he was sitting in the low 90s, you know, he was sitting plus, God forbid. Would you be happy with the failure? I mean, are you seeking failure at this point?
Boy, as long as you can guarantee me it's not because he was hurt, yes.
But that's part of it. That's the whole thing.
I know. I mean, I would like to have something to try to figure out here, you know? I mean, that's what prospect people like. This is one of the reasons, you know, I don't want to write about big league baseball. One of the best things about the minor leagues is that we're trying to it's a puzzle. It's a Rubik's Cube, if you will. We're twisting things and trying to figure out what something can be. And with Strasburg, it's just kind of this known, you know, block of solid gold that's impenetrable. And I don't know what I do with it anymore.
Well, he's not an abstract entity. I mean, that's the problem. That's
kind
what's
of
great
is.
About. Yeah, but no, I mean, he's a given.
I see what you're saying. Yeah,
he's an object that you can identify. That's, when you look at him, he's a commodity. When you look at other players in the developmental process, you know, the canvas could be anything. I mean, within a certain scope, but I mean, with him, I mean, come on, he's a number one pitcher that's just hiding in AAA right now.
Right, and anything else, whoever you want to pick out, you know, as the best pitching prospect in baseball. I mean, who's the best pitching prospect in baseball when Strasburg's up? I don't know. There's a lot of candidates and no obvious one, but all of those guys, they were the six guys you threw out there. There's all some sort of hole in their game. There's all some sort of they could use to improve this, or I'm not sure this is going to work. And it's just everything's going to work. I mean, Kurt Schilling, a guy who I'm not a big fan of as a human being.
No, he's a moron.
Right. I guess he said recently that, you know, this guy's the best pitcher in baseball right now. Period. And he might be. I don't think that's a completely insane statement. I'm not convinced, but I don't think it's a completely insane statement. I certainly think eventually Strasburg will be the best pitcher in baseball. And so, yeah, I don't know what to do with it.
He has the tools to, yeah.
Right. I mean, he has better stuff. Nobody in baseball can match his scouting report right now. With you know, the most conservative report you could give would be an 80, you know, 260 to 70 pitches and 70 plus command and control.
Right. It's ridiculous.
No one in the majors can match that. Nobody.
And no, so, he's a video game.
Right. Yeah, exactly. And so I don't know.
He just has to get the results first. I mean, obviously he has the tools, and I do believe that he's going to be, you know, one of the best pitchers in baseball, but I mean, he still has to do it.
Yeah. So, okay, well, we'll move on, because I'm already bored of talking about Steven Strasburg. Okay, one other thing we want to talk about, or at least I want to talk about, I don't care if you do or not, is I was writing a piece this week, it's up on the site, where I looked at the three teams with the worst records in baseball and kind of what their system has that might help. And one of those teams, of course, was the Mariners. And the Mariners were one of the poster boy teams, along with Boston, as the pitching and defense. This is the new era, and teams have finally recognized that defense is the way to go, and good pitching, and keeping runs off the board, and yammer, yammer, yammer. And where we are right now, the Mariners stink, and the Red Sox, compared to expectations, stink. And so this whole revolution that was talked about and written about and blogged about as being, you know, the new thing that brilliant teams are doing, has this revolution kind of been shot down before it ever got any traction?
Well, I mean, first of all, I don't think it's a revolution. I think it's an excuse. I think it's an excuse after the fact for teams who weren't able to put together competent offensive teams. Now, Seattle, I mean, that's a dead ball era team. On offense, it's not, you know, they're not going to score a lot of runs. You know, yeah, sure, they're going to have great pitching. They're going to have great defense. That's great. And it's also, that's important to build a team on, but, you know, don't you think that they'd rather say that they are a complete team rather than a team that's going to manufacture? I mean, it just seems why would a team want to say that they're going to be a team that manufactures runs in order to, you know, to score? As far as the Red Sox, I don't think that they're built on, you know, a pitching and defense first. I mean, I think that they're just really underperforming right now.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the Red Sox were constructed differently, but you still saw a lot of talk about pitching and defense. I think the Red Sox were kind of seen as because let's face it, like the defensive guys they added, like you know, Beltre and Cameron and even Scudero, if you believed in what he did last year, these guys were not offensive nothings. But still,
right.
It was still the Mariners were the pitching and defense team, and the Red Sox were the pitching and defense team who could hit a little too.
I think
you make a good point.
You know?
I mean, I like.
I
the
think
point.
It's a convenient brand.
Yeah, like it's basically an excuse.
It certainly seems that way. I mean,
it's a marketing term.
It has to be because pitching and defense. Obviously, you want that. But when you're leading with that and then you don't really discuss, oh, yeah, by the way, we have, you know, three mashers in the middle of our lineup that, you know, are going to allow us to score runs. We have guys who can get on base at a high clip, you know. You don't hear any of that. You hear pitching and defense, and then you hear, oh, we're going to manufacture some runs. I mean, when you build a dead ball era team, the only way you can market it is through pitching and defense.
So this is just making up for a flawed roster construction.
I mean, I'm sure people in, you know, who follow Seattle would argue against that. And I mean, they might have a point. I mean, I'm not a Seattle fan. I think that, you know, they assumed that the West was winnable, which, you know, I think it's a disservice to a team like the Rangers who, yeah, sure, this may come off as homerism, but they have the ability to score runs. They have good defense, and if the pitching comes together, you know, they're gonna win the West, and it looks like they're gonna win the West.
But every team has that. Every team has that if it comes together. I mean, you say the Rangers are gonna win the West, and we'll make.
I do. I believe that they're gonna win the West.
I mean, I think you're right. I mean, if I had to, you know, make a bet on who's gonna win the West, I'd put money down on the Rangers. But I don't think I'd put a lot. I mean, you watch a lot of this? Do you really think that CJ Wilson and Colby Lewis are going to pitch this well all year?
No, I'm not sure about that. But we also have, I say we.
But saying we, the Rangers that's pet peeve. You're not we. Unless you collect a check from a team, unless you either play for a team or collect a check from a team, you're not part of we.
Well, we have a really good farm system, and I think that the Rangers, you know, there's some ownership issues, obviously, and I don't want to get into that right now, but, you know, I think that they have more options than any other team in the division. And do you think that Seattle is a team that can contend for the division title? I mean, do you think that that team, that roster, and that farm system can win the West?
No, I thought coming into the season they were a 500 team, and now that they're well under 500, even if they play as well as I think they could play, if they're a 500 team from here on out, they're still going to finish with a losing record. So no, I don't.
Well, what about Oakland? Do you think that team, that young team, can win the West?
No, I don't. I don't think they have enough offense, and they've had some injuries, and I don't think that the pitching staff is deep enough.
So Texas wins the West.
Yeah, like I said, that's where I'd put the money, but I'm not sure I'd plunk down a lot. I think Texas has an ability to implode as well.
We do.
Oh, man, this is going to be a long problem.
It is.
And it does revolve around Wilson and Lewis, and I don't think either guy is going to, you know.
Well, you don't like Lewis.
I don't think either guy is going to pitch. I think you overrate Lewis, but I don't think either guy is going to pitch his way out of the rotation or anything. But I don't think there's any chance in hell they pitch this well all year long. Equation a bit.
Does it really? I mean, who's going to come up in that division?
That's the best point. I mean, that's the best point. You're saying Texas is going to win because there's no other alternative.
I think that they were constructed the best of any team in the division, and I think that they have the farm system, you know, and the GM, you know, and the scout team in place to make the right moves. And, you know, I trust in that. I think this is the year that the Rangers win the division. I don't know how far they're going to go. They may not be a 90-win team, but they are going to win the division.
Fair enough. Win
we, we. We're going to win the division.
Well, I don't know who we is, but I agree with you. The Rangers are probably going to win the division. So, well, let's end on that. We'll come back. We're going to bring in Stephen Goldman to get back to our going nowhere discussion on manager value and how to evaluate managers. Then we'll bring in our special guest, not Jim Tracy, to chime in. And then we'll talk about some non-baseball stuff. So we'll be right back. Okay, welcome back. Before you heard Jason and I ramble incoherently two or three times about managers and what's a good manager and what's not and how do we measure, and to bring in a special guest. We're going to have other special guests later on, of course. We will have not Jim Tracy coming to talk about this. And as you already heard, we're going to bring in who's our list already? Ron Washington, Ringo Starr, and Vin Scully in future episodes.
And Ron Washington
again. But our first big special guest is Stephen Goldman, who all of our BP people know very well, is a guy who writes about historical aspects of baseball and kind of playing the if you don't know your past, you don't know your future game, and comparing what's going on in baseball now to some of the things that's happened before. He also writes about dead baseball players almost every day for us when he's not doing that. He's blogging about the Yankees for the Yes Network. When he's not doing that, he's blogging about politics over at wholesomereading.com. He's a far more talented writer than Jason or I.
And that not is to mention true.
Far more prolific. But he's also a manager expert for a few reasons. The first thing is he edits all of our manager comments for the annual. He yells at me about not writing the manager comments when I don't, because I don't never know what to write. And so he writes some of mine for me. And he also wrote a book on managers. He wrote about Casey Stengel in a book called Forging Genius, which is just a fantastic book, and it's on Amazon and all your various favorite places. But we're bringing Stephen to answer all of our questions, and if he doesn't, he'll never be on the podcast again.
Ever.
And so, Jason, let's just real quick, let's restate our big issue here, and then we'll let Stephen go for a bit.
Okay. In the Rangers world, several blogs have started to highlight the fact that Ron Washington has made some questionable in-game decisions, most notably the sacrifice bunt with Elvis Andrus. Now, as of last night, I don't know what he's doing right now. Elvis is hitting 320. He's getting on base at a 420 clip. 420. And Washington keeps taking the bat out of his hands. He's leading the team in sack bunts. The Rangers are winning. And on occasion, when the runners are moved over, we score. I say we because I helped. There has to be a point where Washington is graded not just on the wins of the team. Now, it's my belief that the Rangers are going to, you know, coast in the West. I actually believe they're going to coast. It's going to look like Washington, you know, played a large role in that. And, you know, I'm sure he did. But at what point does his ability to coach and work a clubhouse, when is that negated by his in-game decisions that are questionable, to say the least?
Well, before I answer that, I just want to thank you guys for the ridiculous introduction, which
that was long.
Makes me sound very very busy, and I was listening and wondering how I can possibly do all that stuff and still manage to be so indolent at the same time.
Good work.
I'm not really sure. I know it has to do with drugs and insomnia, but the thing about Washington, here's the thing. I mean, to me, the essence of a good manager is not the X's and O's stuff, which for the most part are not going to affect too many games. If they lose the pennant by one game, you know, you can call me back or call me on this. But on the whole, the main thing is, like you said, not just the clubhouse issues, you know, having a professional team ready to go, focused, ready to play, not having your Hanley Ramirez problems get, you know, bite you in the ass too often. But also just this, like, having the right guys in the right places, picking the right players to play. And I'll give you an example, actually, which is, and it's a guy you already brought up, Elvis Andrews, is leading off. And I know I personally was very skeptical of that when they put him up there. I mean, you know, my thought was, hey, Julio Barbón did it last year. Let's give him a little more time. I mean, now we've, you know, we're almost 2 months into the season and he has an adjusted OPS of like 39, which shows that I was wrong. But not only has Barbón not rebounded so far, but like you said, Andrews has a 420 on base percentage, which is roughly, what, 100 points higher than he had last year. So, I mean, yeah. I think more than taking the bat out of his hands, and I agree, anywhere in the American League, eight bunts, and that's how many Andrews has to this point in the season. Eight bunts is a lot. You know, it's a lot of outs to give away, given that you're in the DH league. I will grant you that. But I give Washington so much more credit for having the insight to see that this 21-year-old shortstop, who didn't hit all that well last year, was ready to take on this bigger offensive role, and I don't know if it'll keep paying off, but so far it's paid off for them in a huge way.
Yeah, I agree with everything you just said, and that enters kind of our big question, which is, you know, I don't even know what our big question is because we went in so many circles before, but, you know, we talked about how there's the tactical side of things that isn't really that hard. And I'm being insulting, I don't know. But I mean, like I said before, I really think the three of us could all do the tactical stuff. And then there's kind of the helming side of things, which none of us would be able to do. And so, I mean, we can't measure. I'm happy that you came up with like a tactical thing, or rather a tangible thing that we can measure, which is moving Elvis Andrews to the leadoff spot, which obviously for now seems like a brilliant maneuver. But the stuff that we can't measure, which is, does Ron Marsh have anything to do with the fact that Elvis is hitting 320 with a 420 on base percentage? Does he have anything to do with guys like Colby Lewis and C.J. Wilson pitching really well? Does he have anything to do with you know, Josh Hamilton hitting well again? And so there's really no way to measure that. So, you know, how do we really, and or can we really, measure how good a manager is? And then we go back to kind of like what happened with the Royals last week, where even if you seem to be not that good, Ned Yost still gets a job. You know, Jim Tracy can't win a thing with the Pirates. He still gets a job.
Well, let me answer your question with a question. I mean, does Tony La Russa have anything to do with the fact that every time they bring a veteran pitcher into St. Louis, most recently Brad Penny, that pitcher rebounds and suddenly pitches real well? Or is it Dave Duncan? I mean, the thing is that whether, you know, it's Tony's hand, you know, laying of hands on Brad Penny, that's not happening clearly, but La Russa knows to delegate and to the people who are qualified to do it, and then has the mental flexibility to take that guy's word, be it Dave Duncan's word, and sure, he's been doing it for 25 years at this point, but at some point they had to forge that bond and say, hey, I believe you when you say, hey, Brad Penny can get outs here. I believe you when you say Joel Piñeiro can lead a league in ERA for us. So it's not necessarily that Ron Washington is making Elvis Andrews hit 320 with a 420 on base percentage, because he's not. I mean, maybe he did. For all we know, maybe he said, hey, Elvis, you have a hitch in your swing, you know, take a few more pitches. And it worked. I mean, you don't really know what exactly goes into a player developing. Maybe Andrews just matured a little bit. But the bigger thing is that he was able, whether it was just desperation, hey, you know, Julio Barbón is hitting worse than some pitchers, and I really need some guy up there in leadoff spot, so by process of elimination, I'm going to put him up there. Or he just looked at him and said, hey, this guy's ready to blossom. Whatever it is, he was able to recognize the opportunity that's there in the same way that and I'm not making a direct comparison between him and Tony La Russa, because obviously Ron Washington has a long way to go before he winds up in the Hall of Fame. But you know, in the same way that La Russa is able to recognize that, in the same way that La Russa could look at Skip Schumacher last year and say, you know, this outfielder could sort of play a passable second base for us and hit enough to justify my making that change. I mean, you recognize the opportunities when they come to you. I think this is so much more than the tactical end of it.
Jason?
I mean, that's a good answer.
Right? I put Jason to sleep.
Right. This is not, I mean, I don't have, something that I can just respond with, because, you know, I watch a lot of Rangers games, and a lot of the in-game stuff really does bother me. But we're winning, and ultimately that's what is the most important thing. And I cannot speak to his role in the clubhouse. I've witnessed him around the players, and I know with speaking with some of them that they are, you know, I want to say taken with him. They do respect him, and that's important. That said, it's frustrating to watch some of his moves, and it gives me some concern that maybe this isn't the manager that the team needs.
Well, you know, the hardest thing with managers, we did a book called Baseball Between the Numbers, and we have a chapter in there on managers that was written by James Click, who has since graduated to become general manager of the Rays or something. And, you know, he and I had a lot of debates about that chapter as it went into the book. And I don't know that either of us was completely satisfied with it, but the way where we got stuck, and this is very difficult, is the fallacy of after, therefore, because. You can't say because a manager pushed button A that thing B happened, and say that's what we're sort of talking about with Washington also. You can't know, again, as Kevin brought up, like, you know, did he hit because of the move? Did he move because he was hitting? Did Washington say anything or not say anything? It's not really clear. So the best thing we can do is draw inferences. As far as the tactical stuff that you're seeing in games, and as Kevin remarked earlier, I see a whole lot more Yankees than anything else. So I can't really comment on Ron Washington's in-game managerial prowess beyond the few games that I've seen of them this year, including when they were here recently. But it seems to me that there are a few guys that I'd be really happy with, that in almost any game, it's easy to pick apart some of those moves. I don't know that there are any John McGraws out there right now or Billy Martins out there right now who are winning games on you know, really canny, you know, strategical innovations. It's been a very static game for the most part over the last 20 years or so.
Well, I mean, do you think, when we talk about like the two aspects, there's the tactical aspect, and there's that very muddy, we cannot really define it, helming a team aspect. Yeah, again, going back to the Yankee thing, yeah, I don't think anyone's confused Joe Torre with being a tactical genius. And Joe made some funny decisions, and he did strange stuff in the bullpen when he didn't have anything else besides Rivera. And so, I mean, do you just even have a percentage in mind for how important those two things are? Is it 20% tactical and 80% the stuff we can't ever understand?
I would think it's even less. I mean, I think it's the tactical end is so small. I mean, assuming a certain competence, that's the word I was looking for. There are guys who just can't do this game, who are incapable of making proper pitching changes or asking the pitcher to bunt when the pitcher spot comes up. I mean, that stuff has happened, and those guys don't last very long. But for the most part, I mean, yes, there are going to be some spotlight decisions that come up, and I've been picking on Joe Torre for the 2003 Jeff Weaver over Mariano Rivera in Game 5 of the World Series for however many years, 7-8 years now. I mean, no, Joe Torre wasn't a tactical genius. Joe Girardi is not a tactical genius, as I think he showed in the playoffs last year. Nonetheless, he won a World Series. And one of the notable things that Joe Girardi has done, and this is, again, this is that helming thing, to use this word that I'm imagining, like Norse guys with Viking helmets now.
Yeah, I'm seeing a lot of brass.
Exactly. was that he rebuilt his bullpen on the fly twice in 2 years, and it seems like he'll have to do it again this year. In that, you know, when his first year they had one set of relievers to open the season, and they got rid of those and brought in guys like Edouard Ramirez and Jonathan Albaladejo. Then last year they opened the season with those guys. They failed. They got rid of them, brought in a new set of guys, and shifted Phil Hughes to the bullpen and did that kind of thing. And then again this year, they're having problems with some of the guys that they've opened the season with, and they're going to have to rebuild it again. And I don't know how many managers could really successfully do that. So did he go insane with pitching changes in the ALCS against the Angels last year in ways that burned the Yankees in a couple of games? Yeah, absolutely. And that's unfortunate. But the bigger picture stuff, he excelled at. And again, I think that's what matters at this stage.
Hmm.
See how it's good to always bring in the smart guy?
Yeah, I mean, it's good. I mean, you got to understand when, especially with blogs, I mean, we get a topic and we just beat it to death. And, you know, then it becomes bigger than it is. And with the Washington situation in the Sacbaunce, yeah, there's a lot of people who are carrying torches about this. And, you know, I'm one of them. I really have a problem with it. But overall, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, I mean, I think one thing that doesn't help this recent thing, which is just that I know, because I was actually watching this game, was 2 weeks ago in an extra – I'm almost sure it was an extra innings game against Oakland. He did wacky, crazy stuff with the bullpen that made no sense.
Oh, yeah, sure.
And so if you own WashingtonTacticalWatch.com, you're already kind of at DEFCON 4 because of what's already happened. And so the Andrus bunt starts at 7 instead of 2. You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Of course. And, you know, as I said, you know, I can't really speak to, you know, his value in the clubhouse. I do know players like him, and I know he's a great coach, you know, obviously. But, I mean, when the Rangers win the West, he's going to be, you know, he's going to receive manager of the year votes. And there are people in the Rangers world who will be very upset that a manager who has done some of the in-game stuff, the stuff that they can see that's tangible to them, you know, they're going to be upset that he's recognized and for the team's success as opposed to, you know, chastised nationally for making some questionable decisions on the field.
But maybe he is responsible for the team's success. Despite the bunt, despite the funny bullpen usage, maybe he is responsible for guys playing way better than one expected.
Right. I mean, I'm trying to be harsh right now, but
I was going to say Larry Boa got a Manager of the Year award. I mean, Eric Wedge got a Manager of the Year award. There, Bob Melvin, who doesn't have a job, has got a Manager of the Year award. I mean, that's Gene Lamont. I mean, Jeff Torborg. I mean, guys. And I'm looking at a list, by the way. This is not off the top of my head, but
don't John say Maxwell. That. Audio.
I gotta be fair.
Of disbelief. Come on.
Yeah, but I dialed that up real fast just because who remembers Manager of the Year winners? I mean, you ask me a list of MVPs, or I might come up with a bunch. But you know, I mean, I think you're right. I don't. Again, to me the sack bunts are a bad thing. I mean, as I said, in the American League, you can't give away outs. And I mean, I think that a manager's job is to preserve those 27 outs and make them last as long as possible. So you know, you put off the end of the game as long as possible until you've had the chance to score some runs. So it is an odd thing that he's doing. But without knowing the circumstances intimately, it's difficult to know if all of those bunts that they've done have been just sort of reflexive buntiness on his part, and or whether they're some of them have actually been called for.
Right. And I mean, the only reason I brought up the Manager of the Year is just because it's a form of national recognition. And I think that would pain some people who are frustrated by his in-game decisions.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. I mean, let's play our game and assume that the Rangers win the West, okay?
They are going to win the West.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They might not, but let's play our game and assume they are. And they probably are, but let's just assume they do. I mean, do these people, the angry blog mob, if they win the West, do they really want like Ron Washington out still? Because he bunted a couple times when he shouldn't have?
I'm not sure. You'll have to ask
you
them.
Might.
Wouldn't that be?
I'll have an opinion about it. I mean, it just depends. I want to see how the rest of the season plays out.
Let me argue it from the other side now. I mean, I watched Bob Brenly win a World Series, and Bob Brenly had to be the most tactically inept manager I've seen in my life. It's hard to believe that Ron Washington would be worse than Bob Brenly, and yet Bob Brenly was gone within a couple of years of that because he was horrible. Phil Garner went to a World Series and was gone a couple of years after that because he had a long track record of suckage before he got to that point and wasn't really adding that much to the club. I mean, it's not necessarily a reason to forgive a manager for all his faults at that point. I mean, sometimes good things do happen to bad managers.
Right.
So our mystery is not solved.
No. Well, we'll ask Ron when he comes on.
Right. Well, when we have Ron Washington, Vince Scully, Ron Washington, Ringo Starr on future episodes. Is the mystery solvable, Stephen?
I think that it's difficult. I mean, you know, when I talked to guys about Casey Stengel, I got a lot of conflicting views from guys on the same incidents and on his personality. And they would tell you, you know, on one hand, what a son of a bitch he was, and then on another hand, how personally generous he could be. And that, you know, whoever, you know, he would come out before a game and say, hey, whoever gets hit by a pitch today, I'm buying you a case of beer, or I'm buying you a tuxedo. I mean, just like things like that. And then at the same time, they'd say, well, he benched me on this occasion, it really pissed me off, and I've never gotten over it. And it's hard to say because you're dealing with personalities. I think what's interesting to me is that if you look at the whole population of managers, like ever, like going back to 1901, it's under 500 guys who've actually gotten to do this since the 20th century. And of those, more than half don't get a chance to do it for more than 1 to 3 years. They're tried, they're found wanting, they don't win, they happen to get, you know, they got the Pirates at the wrong time. And you know, lost 270 games or 300 games in 3 years, and that was it. They didn't get another chance. And then there are only about 80 of them who have managed more than 10 years, who have gotten to do this again and again and again. So it's like there is a filtering process that's going on. Like I said, there are guys that can't do it, and I don't even quite know where I'm going with this except to say that you know, somebody like Ron Washington will fall away regardless of how well the team does, because like I said, but you know, if he's not good, if these strategic flights of fancy that he's taking really are misdirected, if he's as clueless as you're making him out to be, then eventually that's going to show through regardless of how the team does, because teams evolve, they're not static, and teams needs change. And in the same way, not to keep falling back on Yankees examples, but actually the current Royals are a good example of this too, in that Trey Hillman was more of a Martinet, and Ned Yost seems to be more of a let them play kind of guy. What I was going to say was Billy Martin and Bob Lemon in 1978, where Billy Martin was going all sort of Captain Queeg, you know, on the Yankees. He wasn't eating. He certainly was drinking. He was taking pills to stimulate his appetite. He was paranoid. He was pale. I mean, they had to let him go and just bring in Bob Lemon, who called everybody Meat, who didn't, you know, he didn't even have first names for people. Just, you want to play third base today, Meat? Go ahead. You want to pitch today, Meat? Okay. Ready to come out of the game, Meat? No? Okay. Get another batter. And I mean, and they won a World Series that way. So needs change, personalities change. And unless you really think he's going to play them out of a close race, on the basis of these decisions that he's making, the fact that the team is playing well overall and seems to support him and be enthusiastic to play for him, in spite of what he went through this winter, for example, that he has their loyalty, I think that's a good thing. I think similarly in Florida, where the team seemed to come out and support Freddie Gonzalez, even though Hanley called him a busher, I think that's a good thing overall for team unity. So even if it is the biggest star on the team who's the one, you know, who ends up with egg on his face.
And to get back to a point you made about a minute ago, Ron Washington is still kind of in the nascent part of his managerial, hopefully for him, career.
Yeah, well, I mean, he starts a little bit old, you know. I mean, yeah. we think of guys like Connie Mack and Casey Stengel as guys who managed, you know, into their 70s. Or I don't know, Jack McKeon. But, I mean, most of them are kind of done at this point. There's not a whole lot of 60s managers out there, actually, until very recently.
Okay, so we've solved nothing, but we've had a good conversation.
Ryan, he won.
Right. And Stephen won.
Big time.
So. Excellent. Well, Stephen,
because I came off like a Ron Washington hater.
Are you?
And I lost. No, I'm not. I mean,
there, see, now you clarified it.
I do question some of his decisions, but, I mean, the way that Stephen articulated it, I mean, it does make a lot of sense, and I think if more people were to hear that, then perhaps they would ease off on some of the, bashing of the minutia of the in-game stuff.
But the thing is, I mean, is there a manager, Stephen, you might be best equipped for this too, I mean, is there a manager around that you think of as a really smart tactical guy?
I mean, that's the thing. I don't.
I think our 3 seconds of silence there answered the question.
Right.
So, but we've had them in the past. Or was that reputation? I mean, Earl Weaver was a tactical genius, right? I'm not wrong there, right?
No, I think you're correct. I mean, okay. I mean, it also helps if you have starting pitchers like he did.
Right, right. But, I mean, that now we're back to like the old, like the NBA Phil Jackson argument, right? That he's.
But no, but a more serious answer to that is that a lot of Earl Weaver's tactical thinking happened before the game. Earl Weaver didn't have a bunt or a hit and run sign. He didn't like that. They did steal bases in some years. He didn't hate the stolen base. It wasn't a huge part of what he did. But I think the Orioles did lead the league in steals once or twice when he was there. I mean, the thing is, he did a lot of his tactical thinking in his office before the game when he made out his lineup and said, this is how I'm going to configure my lineup so I can get my famous 3-run homer out of it. This is how I'm going to run the game because Jim Palmer's starting tonight. Well, I don't have to think about that part that much. You know, there's, again, I think that the one-run stuff that everybody gets crazy about is so overstated. And unless you can, you know, show me that a manager has consistently, and I mean year after year, because we know that these things are really vulnerable to luck, like obscenely underperforms the average in one-run games. And for the most part, you know, even if a team, just to really exaggerate, is like 0-50 in one-run games in a given year, we often see the swing where then the next year they're 50-0 in one-run games because there's just a whole lot of luck that comes in at that point. So unless you can show me that a guy underperforms in one-run games year after year after year because he's you know, he's asking the catcher to steal second with a, you know, down one run or bringing in the wrong pitcher every time, I feel like it's really a smaller part of things, and that most of the managers that are in the majors today, if not all of them, are, you know, at least, you know, minimally competent to do the kind of tabletop game things that you know, the old you know, Stratomatic test of a manager's ability. They have that minimum ability.
Right. I agree with that. I do think that the one thing that we need in order to properly measure managers, we don't have, nor is there a path to ever having it.
No, it's, I mean, again, like, you know how many books have been written about Billy Martin or by Billy Martin's players, and you can't get a consistent view of Billy Martin out of those books.
Right.
Even, you know, and he's been dead over 20 years, so whatever they're going to say, they've said. There's nobody who's protecting Billy Martin at this point. And again, you get, again, he was a really generous, selfish, decent, paranoid, good, evil, sober drunk.
Sounds like Jason.
That should have been the name of the podcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, thanks, Stephen, for being our very first guest.
Oh, my pleasure.
Oh, actually, yes, yeah, you're our very first guest because we're going to come up. We're going to come back.
I get a steak certificate, right?
You're going to get a steak. You get $20 off at some place. We'll send it out to you. I used to do this radio gig, and every time I would do it, they would send me a $100 gift certificate from Lobstergram. And so I would get steak and lobster for being on the radio. It was the best. It was the best gig by a mile. So I'm not getting you steak or lobster, Stephen.
Okay. Well, you can resubscribe me to the Fruit of the Month Club if you want to do that.
I will do that. We'll get you back in the Fruit of the Month Club. So
known fact that if they like you at BP, you get Fruit of the Month Club. But
that's we're revealing the secrets in episode 0.9. So well, thanks, Steve.
My pleasure.
Thank you. Hasta luego.
We'll take another break. You'll listen to some more childish, high testosterone, naked ray gun guitar riffs. And then we'll come back with, we want the Beatles again. And
I'd like to hear the Beatles, yes.
Oh, that's one of the rules. We'll never play the Beatles on the podcast.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, well, you'll see. It's the right decision. So we'll be back with Not Jim Tracy, and then we'll do stuff that's not even baseball. So we'll be right back. Thanks. Why did I say thanks there?
I don't know.
I don't know either. Welcome back to episode 0.9 of the podcast. We have a very special guest here for episode. It's Jim Tracy, or rather, not Jim Tracy, so we don't get into any legal troubles. But Jim, your handler said we could only ask you one question. We just finished a long conversation about managers and why managers get hired and why some keep their job, why some get fired, and why some guys who have losing records still get these jobs. Now, you won some with the Dodgers, but even after failing with the Pirates like everybody else, you moved on to the Rockies and were suddenly the manager of the year and the hot topic again. What are your thoughts on what makes a good manager?
I think what makes a good manager is to know the game of baseball, which of course was invented many years ago. People say in Cooperstown, New York, up in the middle of the state, a quaint little village with Abner Doubleday. Other people dispute that, but that's beside the point. That's really not what you ask about Goldie. I would say what makes a good manager is to be highly intelligent and know how to do things like take an Eric Gagne, for example, and turn him into a closer. Or take a Paul LaDuca, who'd been in the minor leagues for 17 years, and make him your starting catcher. That is what makes a good manager. As far as why managers continue to get jobs, I think it's because of the way the organizations are run. And, of course, they do hire managers, and all the organizations have those things. And over the course of a period of time in which I have managed with the Dodgers of Los Angeles and also the Pirates of Pittsburgh, the great franchise, and where I lost to Pittsburgh, and you asked me why I lost to Pittsburgh, and it clearly wasn't my fault. I did not have good players with the Pirates of Pittsburgh, so that henceforth I lost. And I went to Colorado, worked my magic last year, and they had good players, and I think I was there, and I made them better players, and that's why you have managers, Kevin.
Okay, thanks so much, Jim. We'll talk to you next time.
All right, Goldie, good talking with you.
Okay, welcome back. We're going to be doing our last segment here for episode 0.9 of the podcast, and I'm going to warn you guys. We're going to talk about some non-baseball stuff here for a second. We're going to do this every week, whether you like it or not. And every time I do a chat over at Baseball Prospectus, at some point the conversation is going to veer away from baseball, albeit briefly, but we'll talk about, you know, music, and I'll talk about how much I don't like the Beatles.
That's we'll talk ridiculous.
About, which is, of course, the right way to think. Or we'll talk about movies for a little bit, or I'll make a comment on some fine Japanese video games. And every time that happens, I get like three emails that say,
"You should only talk about baseball. It's a baseball chat."
That's the voice I assume they have, by the way.
What if they had Vin Scully's voice?
Well, then I'd respect it more, but that's not the voice they have. Why do you talk about that? You should stick to baseball. But for every three emails I get 10.
A love letter.
I get a love letter. I get 10 of them about, we really like when you talk about the video games and the movies and how the Beatles are kind of overrated crap. And,
I don't know if you want to open that up because I'm ready to go with that.
That'll be a subject to come later. Every week we're going to have our pop culture moment, if you will. We'll talk about a movie or a piece of music or some sort of cultural thing, because we're well-cultured people, at least you are. And but we're gonna start with a movie recommendation, and this is, if you have Netflix, put it in your Netflix queue. If you have the streaming version of Netflix, it's on the streaming. It's even, if you have an HDTV, it streams in HD. So this is, you have no excuse not to see this movie. And this is a movie that Jason recommended to me, and it's a British film from a couple years back. And it's called Bronson. Jason, why is this a great movie? Because I agree with you that it is.
It's a great movie because it really, it has an aesthetic, and it puts you in.
Well, let's set up people. What's the movie about on a base level?
Okay, it's about a criminal thug type in Britain in the mid-70s is when it started, I believe. And
it's a true story, based on a true story.
It's loose.
Yeah, it's an artistic interpretation of a true story.
Right, so what it is this guy who, you know, he's in and out of the system, he finally goes to prison, and his whole deal is, you know, he's very, very physically abusive to the guards. He fancies himself a pugilist of sorts and even dabbles in it under the name Bronson. And the entire movie is just built on, you know, I mean, it's a social commentary, obviously, but Bronson, you know, you become him. You become this isolated prisoner dealing with all the outside issues that's forcing you to have this type of reaction. His is obviously more extreme than what the average person would do, but his means of, you know, dealing with his issues, it's really phenomenal. I mean, it's obviously an arty film, and it borders on, you know, overt Northern European intellectualism, but it's a very good movie, and I'll let Kevin give his opinions of it now.
It's a great movie, and it's
lots of nudity in it. Male nudity.
This is a rated R adult. This is not, you're not going to put this on for your kids at 3 p.m. This is
see a penis.
You will.
See a penis.
And if you've been in a locker room, you've already seen some. And so, yeah, I mean, this is an adult movie.
And that's
this,
another segment.
Exactly. We'll do that later. But it's rated R. It's not a long artsy movie. It's a short artsy movie. It's about an hour and a half. But I would only describe
boys,
as
mood, the Pet Shop Boys,
Kubrickian lighting, amazing lighting. But the performance of Thomas Hardy, who plays Bronson, is truly Oscar worthy. It's one of the best acting performances in a movie that I've seen in recent times. And you know, the thing is, it is a social commentary movie. I'm not going to get into Northern European intellectualism, but because I never will. And
I wanted to, you know, maybe discuss the fact that the Danish filmmaker and his anyway, go ahead.
But there is a certain, I think it's a commentary on how everybody in any situation wants to make something of themselves. And Bronson has this very kind of going nowhere life, which leads to some criminal acts that land him in jail. And once he kind of gets locked into that cycle, he wants to make something of himself, and it seems like his solution to this is to become, with pleasure and with pride, the right. most notorious man in the British penal system. His goal is to be that top dog, to be the one, to be the worst possible prisoner in the prison system, because that's what he can achieve. That's his goal. That's what he can be. And again, Hardy is just remarkable as Bronson. And
he transforms. He transforms in, like, you know, a complete method. In a complete method way. I mean, he put on so much. I mean, it's Raging Bull esque. I mean, when I say that his performance is De Niro in Raging Bull, I'm not, you know, just talking shit. His performance was that good.
I'm a huge Scorsese fan. I'm a huge Raging Bull fan, and I totally agree with you. I don't think that's going overboard at all. I think it's amazing. And to be fair, not everyone likes the film. It got some mixed reviews. My girlfriend wasn't a huge fan of the film. She found it certainly to be aesthetically interesting, like we talked about. It is, you know, it's an artsy film. But she found kind of the story and even Bronson himself to be a predictable thing where, you know, Bronson does something incredibly violent and psychotic, moves to the next stage, and whatever happens, the response is going to be something incredibly psychotic and violent. But I thought that aspect of the story was part of what made it so fascinating, was that he never even explores another option. And never considers another option.
No, he accepts his role and then tries to thrive in it. And yeah. it's beautiful. His look, I mean, he's totally got the anachronistic mustache. He looks like a bare knuckle brawler from turn of the century. I really can't stress this film enough. I mean, it is just it's really a beautiful film.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. I watched it. I was blown away with it. Actually, just a couple of days later, watched it again. And again, the movie is Bronson. Yeah, put it in your Netflix queue. It's streaming. It's streaming in HD. You have no excuse not to see this movie. And there's a good chance you hadn't heard of it till now, because I know I certainly hadn't. So that's our pop culture moment. Maybe we'll talk about how the Beatles aren't very good another time.
Okay, you know, first of all, that's ridiculous. And second of all, I'd like to add that my wife, and I know you disagree with this, because I'm rocking a pretty badass mustache right now. She thinks I look like Tom Hardy and Bronson, and I know that pleases her. And I know you disagree with this, but I'm going to go with it.
I'm just picturing, I'm picturing you with just a mustache. And the thing about Bronson is that, have you shaved your head?
No, but I would take it that far because apparently it's very attractive.
Believe me, shaving your head is the way to go, but...
Well, I know. Well, you cover it with weird hats.
Weird?
Well, what do you wear, Kangles? What are you, Samuel L. Jackson?
I have some.
I know.
I'm telling you, I'm bringing hats back, but...
We should talk about that in an episode because I think we need to get that out.
My use of hats?
Yeah, we need to talk about that.
Are you against the hat?
I just think we need to bring in some people and maybe talk you down.
Wow. That kind of hurts inside.
Well, what, and the Beatles aren't a good band? Are you kidding me? No. If I had a sword, I'd come after you.
Well, you come after me about the hat, but the hat, I don't know.
I'm not going to come after you with the hat. I'm just using that as, you know, an angle to get to you.
It's working.
Good.
So let's talk about what's coming up next week before we'll obviously do this again in a week from now, but in the next week, well, let's talk about what you're doing because, I'm stuck here.
What I'm doing is more interesting.
Yes, exactly. I'm in DeKalb, Illinois.
Or maybe not.
You're in Mexico City. So what are you doing in Mexico right now? And just so you know, because I know you're kind of, for lack of a better term, a Mexico kind of guy.
Claro, sí, I am. I'm down here. First of all, I'm working on my transformation into Bronson. I have the mustache. I'm doing a lot of push-ups. I'm trying to get my girl on.
I think some time in a Mexican prison might help with that.
Right. Well, I mean, it's really tough to go to prison here, but I'm sure I could find a way. I am down here for a couple of reasons. First of all, I am down here to see a player in the Mexican League. I'm going to be watching him 3 or 4 times in the upcoming 2 weeks, and we'll discuss that after the fact, perhaps. Not sure. Most importantly... my friend is having an art opening down here 2 nights in a row. His name is, let me anglicize this real quick. His name is Abraham Cruz Villegas, or Abraham Cruz Villegas. He is an object-oriented artist. He comes from the Gabriel Orozco School of Object Art and a protege of Gabriel Orozco. And he's having an opening tomorrow and the next day. And I'm going to go, and I'm going to drink some beer, and I have a good time, and then I'm going to drink some mezcal, and I'm going to howl at the moon.
Well, let me ask you a question. How many listeners do you think, and since we have no idea how many people are going to listen to this, just as a percentage.
I wouldn't listen to this.
I'm not sure even I would, but I'm going to have to. But what percentage?
You're going to send it to me, and I'm going to say I listened to it, but I'm not going to.
See, again, like the hat, you're just trying to hurt me, but I know in reality you love it. And so what percentage of people do you think listening to it, and I know I'm not part of this percentage, have any idea what the Gabriel Orozco School of Object Art is?
Well, I mean, he wasn't just an object artist, but...
I didn't ask you to explain it.
Okay.
I asked you for a number.
I think that anybody who studied art would know who Gabriel Orozco is, whether they know that Abraham Cruz Villegas comes from, you know... his bosom, so to speak. I mean, he's well known. I don't know. I mean,
I don't care. I'm not criticizing. If it's 0.01, I think it's okay. We're talking about. I'm just asking. What's the okay. people? I just think I actually kind of really dig the fact that we have a baseball podcast where we talk about the Gabriel Orozco School of Object Art.
Well, and again, it's
this
not
is what I wanted, Jason. This was what the podcast I wanted to be.
Right, I know. Okay, but let's first talk about the percentage of people who give a shit what I have to say.
Well, let's start with that number's going to go up. The podcast
I think that's probably like at 5% right now, and you know, then out of that 5%, let's see who would give a shit about who Gabriel Orozco was or Abraham Cruz Villegas. Let's see who gives a shit. I'm saying it's 1%. Okay. I'd love to get email from people who not only know Gabriel, which I assume anybody who went to our school does, but Abraham's work, which I think is very important. I'd like to know, you know, I'd like to get feedback on that. I'd like to know that, you know, people go, oh, you know, that I know that artist. He's really good.
Okay, well, here's the contest for the week. If you know, you email us at podcast@baseballperspectives.com. If you know anything about the Gabriel Orozco School of Object Art, Jason will judge all of these emails to decide who best knows.
Let's go smaller. Let's get people to write in who are aware of Abram Cruz Villegas' work. And because, I mean, people should know who Gabriel Orozco is. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the School of Object Art. I that was just a blanket statement. But
that pretentious art
guy. Yes. It's not pretentious.
I'm just asking.
Okay, it's maybe a little pretentious. His work, his Gabriel's recent work is a little pretentious.
Okay.
But anyway, yeah, send in the email, you know. I want to hear from these people, and I want to judge them.
They're just going to flow in. We'll have to get a new mail system.
Right. If we get one,
If we get one, I will be amazed. I will. If you are a Baseball Perspective subscriber, and you can give us some not Wikipedia knowledge, but some honest, true proof of knowledge of Gabriel Orozco and who's the artist again?
Abram Cruz Villegas.
I will personally extend your subscription. So I will
personally show up at your door dressed like Bronson and take you down.
Per your definition.
Well, yeah. Well, that can be negotiated.
Yeah, exactly. We'll figure out what that is exactly. So while you're banging around in Mexico, I will be banging the phones on draft stuff. Draft stuff's coming up. I'll have a piece up. This is silly because I'm going to say I'll have a piece up tomorrow, but that piece is going to be up way before I have all of this audio edited because I have no idea what I'm doing in the editor tomorrow. But I have a piece up right now, as I talk in future tense, about some of the best tools in the draft among position players. I think we'll be doing a mock draft next week, some rankings and all that good stuff. We're going to get a little draft crazy. Thursday, maybe we'll talk some draft. We'll talk some more adventures in Mexico, and we'll talk about the week in baseball, and of course our special guests will be Ron Washington, Vin Scully, Ron Washington, and Ringo Starr.
Right, it might be one man. I mean,
who knows? Right, it's going to be
Michael Winslow. Who knows?
Right, and we'll have Not Jim Tracy back. If you have a question you want to ask Not Jim Tracy again, email us podcast@baseballperspectives.com. But
please email us.
Just email us. Or again, you can do the
recognize us.
Exactly. We're just doing this for attention. And
right.
And again, we have if you have Skype, you can leave us a voicemail. Just look for Kevin Goldstein, or my username is King Clip-On, and I think that's about it. I got a couple people to thank here before. I'm not even sure they're going to be wanting to be thanked after they listen to this. But
no one's going to listen to the end of this. We should put this at the beginning of the podcast.
Nah, you do the thankings at the end. It's just how.
No. I'm talking about our pop culture stuff. That was the most interesting. No. I watched the Ron Washington stuff. I don't know what I was thinking. I had a bottle of wine at dinner. I don't know.
It's going to happen. We do record these late at night. We're recording this late Thursday. It's actually now Friday morning. So I feel good about that. Some thanks to people. First of all, a guy you know, Ted Price, who does Rangers podcast, was nice enough to take my phone call and talk to me kind of down off the roof about my fears about how to do this and pointed me in the right way as far as just some technology and some software and some process stuff. So a big thanks to him. Joe Hamrahi, who did a lot of stuff to kind of get the podcast thing rolling, was a champion for the whole thing. And I'm sure we'll thank more people as we go. Thanks again to Not Jim Tracy. Thanks to Stephen Goldman for talking about managers. Thanks to Naked Ray Gun for providing crunching guitar covers. And, you know, we'll have other music. Yeah, we'll feature.
Thank God.
Shellac, Perubu, a little band. I call the Bear Coat, who's pretty good. We'll have some of them in.
That's right. The Bear Coat. Let's start plugging that.
That's right. We'll get this going.
It's a disaster.
So next, maybe we'll actually make this an official episode. It'll be episode 1.0 next week.
Excellent.
Okay, I'll talk to you. We'll talk to all of you next week. Jason, I'd say I'd talk to you next week, but I'm sure I'll talk to you in between that.
I'll be talking to you in like 5 minutes.
Exactly. Thanks, everybody.